Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler. I am your interim host. And as always, I am joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert, Rick Graham. Rick, how has your last week been going?
It's been going well. Definitely starting to get into a bit of a fantasy football mode, although it's I hate saying that. I probably shouldn't be saying that here, but yeah, I was thinking about not even, you know, doing any leagues this year, but I got suckered into a couple, so been dealing with some drafts this week, but
that's unfortunate. Yeah,
I know it is. I like the drafting part, and then after I should just play best ball, because that's kind of, I just like to draft, and then after that, mm-hmm. I really, you know, I just like watching football for fun on Sundays, you know, if I get a chance, but that's about it.
Yeah, I don't know. I know nothing about football. I'm a baseball only guy, some little bit of basketball. I live in the Bay Area, okay, so it's hard not to be a basketball fan, you know, with the Warriors being so good and all. But this is a bullpen podcast. You're in Boston. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that was such a touchy subject. We have not. All right. Well, let's stick to baseball then. We'll remain friends. Well, this is a bullpen podcast, so as always, we're talking about relievers, we're talking about arm barns, we're talking about relief corps, and as always, we start our podcast off by covering your article, Closing Time, which covers the top 30 closers in all of baseball, and we always begin things by covering the three pitchers that are moving up your list, as well as the three guys that are moving down. The three guys you've got moving up this week are Brandon Hughes of the Chicago Cubs, Jimmy Herget of the Los Angeles Angels, and Nick Martinez of the San Diego Padres. Brandon Hughes is looking pretty interesting, but there does seem to be some questions around whether or not he is the secure closer there, considering Rowan Wick literally just got a save last night. So why is Hughes moving up this week? I know you put out that list before Wick got that save, so let's hear your reasoning.
Yeah, I definitely wasn't expecting Wick to get back into the mix, especially after he had a pretty tough outing this past weekend. But yeah, here teams doing things like this at the end of the year is very frustrating when, you know, it looked like Hughes was really rolling. I mean, he had a little bit of a rough outing last week as well, but for the most part, he's been the far better reliever over Wick second half of the year. So I was kind of on, when I made this list on Monday night, I was thinking that this was probably Hughes' bullpen, you know, from here on out. And the Cubs have a pretty easy schedule for the most part, going forward. So I was, you know, it had been a while since Wick had a save, and yeah, just thinking he would be a top 15 or to 18, you know, closer for the rest of the way, especially with, I mean, the way he's been pitching, the way he's been getting swings and misses, and just the upside there is so much higher than it is with Wick.
Definitely. Just you can just look at their whips, and then you know, like, Wick's got a 1.6 whip and Hughes has a whip below one. So I think it's pretty easy to tell which one is better there. So yeah, I don't know why the Cubs wouldn't use the better reliever in the closer role, but you know, sometimes it'd be like that, and it's just hard to figure out. But Hughes does have the majority of the saves over the past couple of weeks, so it'll be interesting to see if Wick starts getting in there more often, and if it's more of a committee, or if Hughes can just run away with it because he's so much better. But in Los Angeles, the closer position is becoming a little more clear, where Jimmy Herget seems to be running away with it. He's got three saves this past week, all three of the team's saves, and it seems like he's the clear-cut guy out there. Is that why he's moving up your list this week?
Yeah, and it's definitely, I like the move for the Angels' perspective, because he has been their best reliever this year, as long as he's been healthy. I know he's missed some time, and he's not really your prototypical closer. He doesn't get a ton of swings and misses, but he gets weird, you know, swings, and, you know, he's got that funky delivery. He throws like a little short arm from the side, and I mean, he's been super effective in just getting ugly swings from hitters. And you know, if they brought in Tapera and Loop, and neither one of those guys has really panned out. They haven't been the guy that they thought that they were signing this offseason. So It looks like Herr gets the guy for the rest of the season, and you know, Cejeda might mix in too. He's been pitching well. He's been pitching well the second half of the year, and he's mixed into some saves as well. So that's probably the situation for the Angels. But it looks like Herr gets going to be the favorite for most of the saves.
Mm-hmm. He seems like one of the clearest waiver wire pickups right now to just get you some saves if you're in need of them. He just seems to have such a clear role compared to all the other guys that still have question marks, even if they're sort of better pitchers than Herget. In San Diego, Nick Martinez seems to sort of be in the same position where he's taken over the closer role in San Diego, where last week we talked about whether or not it'd be him or Luis Garcia with Josh Hader struggling. And Nick Martinez got three saves in the past week after he pitched back-to-back days. Josh Hader actually snuck in there too. We'll talk about him a little bit more later, but I mean, it should be pretty obvious why Nick Martinez is moving up this week, but do you have any, you know, underlying things that sort of helped you consider bumping him up a little more?
He's been awesome as a reliever this year, and he was okay as a starter, but since he, you know, out of the bullpen this year, he's a, you know, ERA at 1.35, WHIP under one, doesn't strike out a ton of guys, but I mean, as long as those ratios are staying low and he's getting saves on a team that's struggling, but you know, the Padres are still, you know, they're in the playoff hunt. They're going to have to grind out every game here, and you know, Martinez should get his, as long as he's closing out games, should get a fair share of save opportunities the rest of the way. But yeah, Hader getting the save last night or yesterday afternoon wasn't the prettiest thing, but I guess he got it done. And yeah, we're going to talk about him again. It seems like it's been a recurring theme on this pod talking about him, but it's worthwhile when he's, you know, the top closer drafted and you know, what's been going on with him lately.
Yeah, it's been the year of Josh Hader from the offseason all the way through to September. So now we're going to hit the three relievers that are moving down your ranks this week. And the first one is Jason Adam of the Tampa Bay Rays. And that one sort of surprises me. I mean, obviously it's the Rays, so they are always going to do their thing and switching around the closer role. But Adam has been one of the most effective relievers all season. He has a 1.18 ERA. He hasn't really been getting a lot of saves recently because the bullpen has been being used weird. There hasn't been many save opportunities. Is that why he's moving down this week? Because this one sort of surprised me because he's been so electric all season.
Yeah, I would say all three of these guys who moved down, it's basically strictly because of how they've been used lately. I think Adam still has a place, you know, on standard 12 teamers because he's not going to hurt you. And if he adds a save or two a week, then, you know, that's a bonus that helps. But it seems like it shouldn't come as a surprise, but it's appearing that it's just not, we can't count on him to get consistent save chances in Tampa Bay. But, yeah, like I said, I wouldn't go, you know, rushing out to drop him necessarily, especially in head-to-head leagues. I mean, if you're in a roto league where you want to shore up saves and that's all you're really worried about, then, you know, maybe you look at someone like a Jimmy Herget over Adam. But in head-to-head, I would still hold on to Adam as just a, you know, potential 3-4 category help.
Definitely. Sticking in the AL, another guy that you mentioned that is, you know, not really getting just saves all the time. And it's partially because of his team. This is Jonathan Hernandez of the Texas Rangers. They really haven't had a save since, you know, last Friday. So it's been about a week or so since they've had a save opportunity for him to lock down. He didn't even get the last one. It was Jose Leclerc who got the save last Friday. So it's been pretty questionable what the role is for Hernandez. And it just seems like the whole bullpen is a closer committee. It's very reminiscent of the Rays, not at the same caliber, but that like anybody in the bullpen can get a save on any sort of day. Like, I mean, you can go through the whole bullpen and just read off everybody. Hernandez, Matt Moore, Leclerc, Brock Burke, Brett Martin, all those guys have gotten a save this year other than Brock Burke. And Brock Burke is the best reliever in that bullpen. So it's like, yeah, anybody can get a save on any given night. So it's really hard to tell what's going to happen here. Is just that the questionability of whether or not he's going to be the one to get a save on any given night. Is that why he's moving down for you?
Yeah, you pretty much nailed it with, you know, just they could roll out really almost anyone in that bullpen for a save, and it's not really that big of a surprise at this point.
Yeah,
Leclerc got the last save, and I think Matt Moore got the save before that. So, and then probably Hernandez before that. So they've had three different, you know, relievers getting saves at their last three chances. So at one point, you know, I thought he might have a chance. It was looking like he was going to kind of stick in that role. And I think now after they let Chris Woodward go, it looks like it's been more of a committee approach. So not looking great for that standpoint, but still, again, he's been pitching well. He hasn't really deserved to lose the job. So, you know, he's not going to hurt you if you're still rostering him, but I don't know if he's going to be getting, you know, a ton of saves the rest of the way.
Yeah, I dropped him in a couple leagues, so I'm sort of off it now. I'd rather look into other people. I'm pretty sure in the pitcherless staff league that I'm a part of, I dropped him for Brandon Hughes. So maybe I'll look into Hergett as well, because he seems to have a more cemented role in his respective bullpen. So it'll be interesting to see what happens out there in Texas, but they haven't been too hot in the second half, to be honest.
No.
So out in LA, where the team has been super hot, is Evan Phillips, who is moving down your list as well. I wouldn't say it's because of performance. He has a 1.22 ERA. It's just still super muddy out there, murky waters, because Kimbrel is just struggling all season, and it's hard to tell when he's going to get the closer roles back. The last two saves have not gone to Phillips in games that he has pitched in. Chris Martin got a save a few days ago, and Jake Reed got the most recent one. So it's sort of hard to tell what's going on there. Evan Phillips is clearly the most effective reliever in that bullpen, but it's really hard to tell what's going on. I'm sure that played into you moving him down this week.
Yeah, I think the Martin save came in extras after Kimbrel kind of got into trouble, and then Jake Reed just coming up from AAA into a save is, you know, interesting. But it's definitely not because this is Phillips moving down. It definitely has nothing to do with his performance, because he's been arguably, you know, obviously Edwin Diaz has been good, but he's probably been a top three reliever in the NL, you know, at least over the second half of the year. It's an interesting stat I saw on Twitter. He has retired after his last outing. He has retired 29 batters in a row. So basically perfect game throughout multiple outings. That goes with 8 strikeouts as well. So
That's impressive.
He's just been literally unhittable, and no one's been able to get on base against him this month. So it's really, I would love, I mean, he if he was the closer there, I mean, imagine I he would be instantly top 10, I don't like possibly top 5. And it's just been a crazy story with his rise, you know, this year, from kind of coming from out of nowhere to being this dominant reliever for the best team in baseball.
Yeah, and dominant might be an understatement. He's allowed one earned run in the last 3 months. He's a 0.28 since ERA since the start of June, and he even finished off May with a scoreless outing. So it's the Dodgers really know how to create some amazing baseball players, especially on the mound.
Yeah, they just keep churning people out. Yeah.
For sure. So that's going to cover the closing time article for this week. To recap, the three guys moving up that we discussed were Brandon Hughes, Jimmy Hergett, and Nick Martinez. Go out and grab those guys if they're on your wire. And the three guys moving down are Jason Adam, Jonathan Hernandez, and Evan Phillips. Most of those guys are moving down because of their questionable roles on the team. Jonathan Hernandez, I think, is the only one that might be worth dropping in anything shallower than a 15 teamer.
I'd agree with that. Yep.
All right, so let's move on to the news of the past week. We really only got one thing to hit on, but it's major news for its respective team. The Oakland A's sort of lost the biggest pieces of their bullpen, basically. Danny Jimenez is out for a season with a right shoulder strain, and Zach Jackson hit the 15-day IL with right shoulder inflammation. Both of those guys have been counted on all season. Jimenez had dealt with a shoulder injury earlier in the season, and he had missed quite a lot of time. And then he returned and he looked like he was moving his way back into the closer role. And now it seems like it's bothering him again, and they're going to shut him down for the rest of the season. So that's pretty unfortunate there. And Zach Jackson is the major league leader in holds. So he's been killing it all year, which is, I don't know how like a guy on such a bad team leads the league in holds. It still doesn't make any sense to me. The guy's 26 holds. So he's been killing it. I think he's tied with Devin Williams now, but, yeah, it's pretty impressive. Oh, he's got more than Devin Williams. Nice. Pretty impressive season for him, but now he's going to be out for at least the next couple of weeks or so. And that basically just leaves AJ Puck out there as the only trusted reliever to get saves. He's the only guy in that bullpen besides Austin Pruitt to have earned a save this season, and Puck has four. So he seems to be the clear-cut closer out there, and it also moves Domingo Acevedo into sort of the setup role slash, you know, guy who's going to close out games if it's all righties and the manager isn't comfortable turning to Puck. Do you have any other thoughts on this bullpen?
No, I would love to see Puck, have the role for the rest of the year, and really interested to see how he performs, just, you know, given that role. I feel like that might be his future there. You more of an Oakland A's fan, is Puck, he's not going to return to the rotation anytime, right? I feel like that ship may have sailed. So his best chance right now is probably to lock up a high leverage, you know, closer or setup role, which he's been pitching well this year. So I think he deserves to get a chance. And that's in the closer role, especially with, you know, the other options available.
Mm-hmm. I definitely think he's probably done as a starter. He just, you got to keep him healthy. He's like a tall guy, 6'7", super lanky. Like, I think just the only way to keep him healthy is using him in short stints. So I think they're going to have to keep him in the bullpen. And it's like, it's looking like it's working out pretty well. He's not in the same vein of Josh Hader, as in he was like a starter throughout his entire minor league career. He sort of turned into a reliever once he was dealing with a bunch of injuries, and that sort of helped him stay healthy somewhat. And the way that he is similar to Josh Hader is that he has long hair and is a lefty. Yeah. So yeah, would love to see the A's get the next Josh Hader, but you never know. He's been really great this season, 2.53 ERA across 53 and a third innings pitched. That comes with a 27.5% strikeout rate. So not super dominant on the strikeout department, but definitely serviceable. And he will likely be getting the majority of the saves across the next couple of weeks at the very least. But I think even when Jackson returns, I think he's still going to be the guy there, because it seems like Jackson is just a guy who just walks too many people. And then he also just does so much. He's been so good in a setup role. You know, like I said, he leads the league in hold. So it seems like he does well pitching that seventh, eighth inning. So I think it should be fine for Puck to hold on to that role for the rest of the season. It'll be interesting to see what the closer of the future can do in the season's final month.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing that and seeing where he lands next year in the preseason ranks.
Definitely. So the crux of our show is going to be a sort of prediction, not really predictions, just like we're going to talk about guys that had really good first halves and how they're doing in the second half, and sort of see what that means for them going forward for the rest of the season, but also into next season, because it's always important to check, like, some guy has a breakout first half and his numbers, like a guy can have a crazy first half where he's got a one ERA and then he finishes the season at 2.50. And you're like, this guy had a breakout season. And it's like, okay, yeah, his first half was really good, but then he hit regression and everything returned back to normal. If you look at like second half compared to first half rather than the year end numbers, it's going to be like, whoa, he had a four ERA in the second half and sort of looked like his old self again. So we're going to talk about guys that have been staving off the regression, but also guys that have not been able to do that and are sort of, you know, falling down rankings across the past month and what that could mean going forward. So we're going to start off by talking about some risers from the second half, guys that performed well in the first half and have kept it going or have just been turning it on in the second half. And we're going to start in Cleveland, where Trevor Stephan has been lights out. He's the strikeout to walk ratio king alongside James Karinchak, who's just a strikeout king. He's been really good at, like, he's got his control under control, which has always been a problem for him in years past, especially after the sticky stuff scandal. Not really scandal, but the crackdown. But it's interesting because both of these guys have been really good, and they've already got Emmanuel Class A out there in Cleveland. So why do you consider them risers right now?
Yeah, I mean, Stefan's been, he had a good, great April, and I had put him way up the holds list, and like, all right, this is like a big breakout candidate. And then he kind of slowed down for a little bit. They started moving away from him and using other relievers in high leverage spots. But second half, he's turned it back on and has been one of the better relievers in baseball. And I know that whole Guardians bullpen has just been pretty lights out this month. That's a big reason why they're looking like the favorites to win the AL Central. But yeah, Stefan, I mean, 18.1% swing and strike rate, ground ball rate's over 50%, K rate's over 30%. I just, you know, all those numbers just are, you love to see it. And then, well, Karinchak's interesting. I know, like, this sticky stuff crackdown happened, and all of a sudden, though, his spin rates are back up to where they were before that last year. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what that's about. I'm not going to speculate, but he's been pitching better. His curveball has been getting swings and misses again. And yeah, he's looking like pre-sticky stuff James Karinchak. And as long as it's working for him and it's working, then he's definitely someone, you know, to keep an eye on for all those K's and hold potential.
It really is a lot of K's. According to Pitcher List, his player page says that he has the second highest strikeout rate. It's at 44.6%, which is ridiculous. He's just been destroying everybody out there with his fastball curveball combination, and it's been pretty electric to watch. I'm glad to see him get back out there, despite any, you know, off field disagreements we might have. he's great on the field. And as for Stefan, he's been incredible in the second half. He's got a 40% strikeout rate himself, giving him a 33.8% strikeout minus walk rate, which is the difference between his strikeout and his walk rate. So he's walking only 6.2% of batters, which is exactly what you want to see. You don't want free passes, and you don't want people making contact. And Stefan has been doing that incredibly well this year. It's kind of turned out into a 2.32 ERA with a 1.95 FIP. So pretty impressive from Stefan. Moving on to Seattle, where we have seen a lot of breakout relievers. To be honest, one of the biggest ones is Andrés Muñoz, who just was incredible in San Diego when he first came up, because he threw 103 miles per hour, and then he went through Tommy John surgery, but he's come out the other side looking like just a dominant reliever. And so has Erik Swanson, but sort of in a different fashion, in that he's just been getting great results. Do you have any notes about these guys and why you feel confident about their seasons?
Yeah, I think, I mean, Munoz, it's like another, talk about Evan Phillips. Where would he rank if he was like the closer? I mean, if Andrés Muñoz was the closer in Seattle, he's easily a top, you know, five or six option with what he's been doing this year. 41% K rate, 22.3% swing and strike rate, second only behind, I'm guessing it's behind Edwin Diaz. He kind of reminds me, he's behind Edwin Diaz in almost every category. So it's like Diaz, him, like in the top three in a lot of categories. So this guy is absolutely electric, and he got off to a slow start. That's why, like, when we talked about, you know, second half risers, this is one of the first names that I thought of, because, you know, the stuff's always been there, but, you know, coming back from a serious injury in Tommy John, he got off to a little bit of a rough start. He had a bad outing in Boston, and I remember thinking, well, maybe like next year is the year for him to kind of, you know, break out. But it was literally like the game after was when he started just dominating the rest of the league. So it's great to see that, just how well he's been pitching this year.
Definitely. He's been pretty impressive in the second half as well. A 27-5 strikeout to walk ratio with a 1.45 batting average against. It's come with a 2.81 ERA, which isn't much better than his first half ERA, but he really just lights up the radar. He's got a 100.1 mile per hour average fastball velocity, and that's not even his primary pitch. His slider, he uses 62% of the time. It's got a 29% swinging strike rate. That is the 12th best among sliders by relievers. So definitely a dominant reliever come in there. And Swanson is just, he's got the lowest ERA in baseball, minimum 40 innings pitched. Yeah.
And the, like, you know, we always talk about like the Rays turning out good relievers, the Brewers, Dodgers, but like, I think the new,
yeah,
the new like top, you know, team to talk about in regards to building and managing relievers, and it's got to be Seattle. And it's not even just these two guys. It's, you know, Matt Brash has come up as a reliever. He's been awesome. They just keep rolling out these guys with just nasty stuff that, like, you know, it's going to be a team that when they make if they make the playoffs, that's, you know, they can go 5 to 6 innings with their bullpen and kind of just baffle hitters. So it would be interesting to see how that plays out in October.
Totally agree. I feel like they have been an incredible bullpen, and we never really saw this in years past. And so it seems like it's a recent phenomenon. Swanson has a 0.84 ERA right now. He's the only person with a sub-1 ERA, minimum 40 innings pitch. So he's been pretty lights out, if I have to say so myself. I'm pretty sure that's a good ERA.
And he's not even, I mean, I guess he's a top 5 reliever on that team, but like any other place, he'd be easily like the best reliever. And, you know, he's got Munoz, Seawald,
Diego Castillo.
Diego Castillo's been pitching well the second half. Yeah, it's really a lot of fun, that bullpen.
Yeah, you can have confidence in them getting the most out of their relievers. It's going to be interesting to see if they can produce like that next year as well. So sticking in the American League, we're going to talk about Joe Jimenez of the Detroit Tigers, one of your favorites when he was coming up, and he's sort of having his breakout season, and it's looking like he could, you know, possibly move into the closer role at some point with Gregory Soto struggling. We'll hit him shortly, but Jimenez is a 3.16 ERA, striking out 34% of batters, and he's just been super solid all year long, and it just seems like he's one of the guys that are going to be pretty interesting to watch going into next year.
Yeah, and, you know, he always, when he was coming up, we thought he was going to be a high strikeout rate guy, and he never, even when he was struggling, he wasn't really missing bats like we had expected. And now he's got a 34% K rate this year, which, you know, puts him 13th among relievers, and 1.03 whip, like, he's not walking, you know, 5.8% walk rate, so that walk rate's come down. He's really, you know, turned the corner this year, and, you know, the Tigers haven't had a lot to you know, be thankful for this season, but their bullpen has been sneaky good with, Soto's been, you know, kind of his Jekyll and Hyde self, but Jimenez has been great. You know, Alex Lang's had some good, you know, has shown some good things. You know, Chafin's been good. I wonder what the Tigers' plan is for next year, and if perhaps, you know, Jimenez will be going into a final year of his contract, and if they were ever to consider moving him, which I probably think they should, like, they could probably get a nice package back for Joe Jimenez.
Yeah, because he's still only 27.
Yeah.
But, career high strikeout rate, career low walk rate, that's a pretty good combination.
Yeah, love to see that when talking about any pitchers, but relievers, definitely.
Mm-hmm. In Cincinnati, the only good reliever in the entire bullpen, Alexis Diaz, the younger brother of Edwin Diaz, has been great pretty much all season long, and he's been just super solid in the second half. He should be the clear cut closer. I always struggle with that one. Clear cut closer. That's a tongue twister. In Cincinnati next year, he should be the main guy out there. Just, he's been so dominant all year. He gets a lot of swinging strikes. He throws the ball hard. He induces hard contact. He just gives up a lot of too many fly balls, but you know, that's something you can work around. And he's just been really solid all year and just doesn't have much competition.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be fun to see especially for, I was thinking about like the World Baseball Classic. If, you know, ooh, if you get both of these, if you get the Diaz brothers, you know, pitching the eighth and ninth for them, that would be pretty electric.
That would be sick.
But yeah, he's, I mean, 18.8% swinging strike rate, 33.2% K rate, ERA under two, whip under one. Yeah, like it's everything you like to see. And hopefully the Reds just, you know, go with him as their closer and they don't get, you know, too, they don't try to, you know, keep his arbitration numbers down, or they, you know, bring in someone like Hunter Strickland to close out games next year. That'd be frustrating. So yeah, hopefully he's in the closer's role for good now. He's obviously not as good as his brother, but the fastball slider combination is still, you know, one of the better duos in baseball.
For sure. Yeah, he's been really good in the second half. He's improved basically across the board, but we've been talking a lot about strikeouts and walks because it's so important, but that's basically the biggest difference you can see for him. He's bumped up his strikeout rate from 30.7% to 38.2% in 18 innings in the second half, and he's dropped his walk rate from 14.3% to 8.8%. So that's a 13-point increase in strikeout minus walk percentage, which is exactly what you want to see.
Yeah, that's, if he can stay there, I mean, that's pushing elite territory. Yeah.
Yes, would love to see a couple elite brothers in the bullpen in the National League. That would be super sick.
Yeah, but that'd be fun.
Yeah, another guy who's had a lot of potential all throughout his career is Hunter Harvey. He's on the Washington Nationals now, and they sort of don't really have too many notable bullpen arms, so he's sort of got a path to taking over the closer role at some point, especially if he continues his incredible second half. How have you been feeling about him? I really haven't really noticed that he's been so good this year.
Yeah, neither had I until somewhat recently. And I didn't realize he's up to 24 innings on the year. That's a little bit surprising, but he's been pitching well. He's staying healthy. He's 31% strikeout rate, which, like, okay, that's great to see. You know, whip at 2.63 ERA. The fastball velocity is probably the biggest thing considering all the injuries, but he's been averaging 98.1 miles per hour on his fastball, which is, you know, great to see that being sustained over 24 innings this season. And, you know, it's always been with him, it's always been health. It's always been just staying on the field. So, so far, so good. And yeah, like we talk about what the options for the Nationals when it comes to closing out games. He's definitely got better, you know, overall stuff than Kyle Finnegan. So I feel like over time, as long as he stays healthy, there could be he could move into that role. I don't know about this year, but you know, if we look into next year, as long as they keep him and he's healthy, then you know, maybe he starts the year off as their closer.
My only reservations about him going into next season especially is that he literally is a one-pitch pitcher. He throws his fastball 75% of the time, which is not like a recent phenomenon either. He's like never had a secondary pitch. It's like a splitter slash changeup, which is hard for StatCast to define the difference between the two, and he sometimes throws a curveball. But 75% fastball is pretty hard to rely on. I mean, it's just if everybody knows what's coming, but he's got a really good fastball. It's just I have some reservations because he only has that one pitch.
Yeah, I know. Looking at it now, it's like splitter 8%, changeup 7%, curveball 6%. It's a bit of a weird repertoire, but maybe. Yeah, you gotta think that this might be him just trying to stay healthy, maybe not throwing a ton of breaking stuff, but he's gonna have to develop something, some sort of secondary to stay locked in. It's really hard. There's some, you know, it happens with lefties, like Colin Poche throws his fastball like 90% of the time. Sean Doolittle used to. They've gotten away with it. Jake McKee, but yeah, it's really hard to just have that one pitch, to have one pitch as a reliever.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Well, we've got a few more second half risers, and then we're going to hit our fallers as well. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick break. And we're back. Welcome back to the In the Pen podcast. My name is Jake Crumpler. As always, I'm joined by Rick Graham. We are covering second half risers and fallers. Right now, we're finishing up the risers half of the list. We've got just a few guys left to hit. And there's a couple setup guys that I put in there because they've just been really solid all year long, but also they've sort of had the roller coaster year, especially for AJ Minter, who I wrote up a little bit in one of my reliever ranks recently. He started the season off incredibly well, where he was just like, he had like the lowest ERA in baseball, that kind of stuff. He was just absolutely killing it. And then he really fell on hard times. I'm trying to find the blurb I had about him. Here it is. He had a rough patch from the middle of June to the end of July, during which he pitched to a 6.14 ERA across 14 and two-thirds innings pitched. And then he recaptured his early season form in August and has only allowed one run in 14 outings with a comes out to a 0.69 ERA across 13 innings with a 20-3 strikeout to walk ratio. So if you had any doubts about how good his first half was and if he was going to be able to keep it up, and especially when he started, you know, to fall off a cliff a little bit, he's really righted the ship and he's once again looking like that dominant reliever.
Yeah, I had a little bit of a concern just given his past and how it's been a roller coaster, but you know, once he started struggling back in July, and he's definitely turned things around here in August. He had a little bit of a rough outing the other day, but other than that, his August has been, you know, awesome. So, yeah, it's, you know, another guy kind of like Joe Jimenez, who had a lot of hype as a, you know, relief prospect kind of, and took him a while, but now he seems to be locked in. You know, the walk rates, the strikeout to walk rate is awesome. 34.3% K rate, 4.6% walk rate. Love to see it.
Wow.
Yeah, he's, you know, that bullpen doesn't need any more help. It doesn't need, they're locked. To talk about the Mariners bullpen, the Braves bullpen has a bunch of veterans, but they're all really, really good. So, you know, Minter's just another one of those options that they can roll out and, you know, expect him to put up a zero.
Yeah. The same can be said for Adam Ottavino, sticking in the NL East. He's been one of the best setup men in baseball, and it's sort of been somewhat quietly. Like, he's got a 2.05 ERA, and he's improved that in the second half. I think it looks like in the second half, he's got a 1.06 ERA across 17 innings. That's since the All-Star break. Pretty impressive. He's got a 22-4 strikeout to walk ratio during that time as well. And it just seems like he's back to his old ways. He hasn't been this good since 2019 with the Yankees, where he had a 1.90 ERA. He's basically doing that same thing now, but what I noticed the most when I was trying to find some guys for this is that he's reverted back to his Colorado days of not giving up free passes. Yeah. Like, over the past five seasons before this year, he was well over 10% every single year, except for 2020 when he was at 10.6%. But all the other years, he was at least 1.5% over a 10% walk rate, which is sort of hard to work around, because you're just giving up too many free passes. It's hard to be successful when you're putting guys on base all the time. But now he's got that down to 6.7%, which is he's cut it in half from last year in Boston, where he really struggled. So it's pretty cool to see him back on top. He's striking out a lot of guys, 30% strikeout rate. So he's been doing exactly what you want to see. And it's perfect for a Mets bullpen that, like, now doesn't have to think about the eighth and ninth inning anymore, because it's just like, once you get Ottavino out there, like I wrote in my reliever ranks yesterday, because they went with their whole pitching staff for the day was DeGrom to Ottavino to Diaz, and I was like, that is not fair.
Yeah, that's gonna be a problem in October for, I mean, even if like Seth Lugo's pitching well, like, or Trevor May, like those guys get it going. There's a lot of options that bullpen has as well. And yeah, it's great. I think with Ottavino, it's just trusting his stuff again. And I think he was trying to be a little bit too cute at times, you know, trying to get a lot of chases, and where, you know, your stuff's just so good. His stuff's so good. His slider sinker, like, from a movement standpoint, and, you know, you don't need to necessarily get a ton of, you know, chases out of the zone. Just, you know, be around the zone a little bit more. So you see that walk rate come down. But, you know, his CSW, you know, is 33.6%. Really, that's up there in the top 25 amongst pitchers. And it's not because he's getting a ton of swing and strikes. His swing and strike rate's only at 12.5%. So he's getting a ton of called strikes. And I think that's just him, you know, trusting his stuff and trying to be around the zone a little bit more, which, you know, with his repertoire, he's able to do that successfully.
Mm-hmm. You're right about the movement on that slider is crazy. It's the got the 10th most horizontal movement according to his pitcherless player page at 9.3x move. I don't know what that what the units are for those stats. I always have been trying to figure it out. Definitely not feet.
It's a lot of movement.
Yeah, definitely the 10th best, yes. Which is probably a better way to put it than saying 9.3. But yeah, he's definitely got some great stuff, even though he doesn't throw like incredibly hard like other guys in the bullpen. Like Edwin Diaz, did you see he threw 103 miles per hour today? Cool. Good luck, Gavin Lux.
I know.
That's not fair. That's really not fair. He talked to Jacob DeGrom, and DeGrom was just like, oh, yeah, just throw it harder. Like, oh, I never even thought about that. So it's going to be unfair out there in New York. It's going to be an exciting playoff atmosphere, definitely in Queens. Mm. The last two or three guys that we've got in the second half risers are Brock Burke and Matt Moore in Texas, where Brock Burke has just been so good all season. He was one of the early guys that everybody identified as some guy who had added velocity to his fastball compared to previous seasons. And that was because he transitioned from being a starter into being a reliever. And it has really paid off. He has the lowest ERA among anybody with at least 60 innings pitched. It's at 1.57. He's got the most innings among sole relievers. So he's just been lights out all season. It's not like his stuff is super crazy or that he has any underlying metrics that stand out to you, but he's just been getting the job done all season long. He hasn't slowed down one bit, but the exact numbers on his fastball in 2019, the last time he pitched in majors, he had a 92 mile per hour fastball. This year, 95 miles per hour. It's been pretty impressive, yeah, to do that. And it's just like, he must just have like deception or something, because if you look at his stuff on his player page on PitcherList, it's hard to find anything that stands out other than the increase in velocity.
Yeah, I've always been, or I guess this year it's been tough trying to figure him out, because yeah, there's the underlying stats, the X stats don't exactly point to this big breakout, but he's just been, you know, able to get a good amount of strikeouts. He's limiting the walks, you know, 27% strikeout rate. I would expect more than an 11.3% swinging strike rate or a 28.8% CSW to go along with that. But, you know, it's also helps from a fantasy perspective that he's first in innings pitch for relievers at 68.2 innings pitch. So you're getting more strikeouts from the innings pitched and just the usage. And that also helps when his whip and ERA are 1.57 and one, and he's got a whip of one. So yeah, when you're getting that out of 68.2 innings, he's definitely a weapon to have rostered. And yeah, I don't know. Probably. I don't know. I'd have to dive a little bit more into it, but I feel like there might be some regression coming next season.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see, but you know, it's great. Yeah, it's great to see the fastball velocity up to 95. That's from, especially from the left side. That's not really anything to joke about.
Yeah, not something to scoff at. Matt Moore is sort of the same way, though, in that he's also increased his fastball velocity 1.5 miles per hour. But then he's got better underlying metrics where he's been getting swinging strikes. He's been inducing soft contact. He's got good expected stats, and he's just been great all season. He sort of gives up too many free passes, and that forces his whip up into the 1.2 range because he walks almost 13% of batters. But he makes up for it by just getting everybody out when they touch the ball. So he's got a 1.95 ERA this season. It's been a pretty cool renaissance for a guy that was like a top prospect at one point. We've talked about him multiple times this season, but do you have any confidence in him, you know, continuing this for the rest of the season and into next year?
Yeah, it looks like the changes are for real. It still surprises me that he's only 33 years old. The way I feel like he's been around for so long.
Yeah.
But yeah, he'll be interesting to see. I believe I'm not 100% sure, but like pretty sure that he's going to be a free agent right at the end of the year. So
yes,
he might be one of the better left-handed relievers out there this year, which is crazy to think about. But yeah, he's getting a lot of swings and misses, 15.8% swing and strike rate. You know, xERA at 2.75. So this, you know, his fastball curveball, you know, duo looks pretty good. And you know, as long as his fastball velo doesn't start creeping down, and I feel pretty confident in him being, you know, a usable option for holds leagues next year, as long as he lands in a good spot.
Definitely. The last guy we've got is a riser. I wouldn't really consider a riser, but he's definitely somebody who hasn't fallen off, and that's Ryan Helsley. He was probably the biggest breakout from the first half. And I mean, you could sort of say that he's fallen off in the second half, but that's just compared to himself. He's got a 1.88 ERA since the All-Star break, and that's only 14 innings, but that's compared to his 0.69 ERA in the first half, 39 innings. But he's just been lights out all season, and it's been a velocity thing. He's just been throwing harder than he ever has. That's a 2 mile per hour jump over last year on his fastball. And then he's also turned his slider into a pitch that he relies on a lot. I think he changed the shape of that pitch, because it looks like on his player page, he used to have a cutter that he used all the time, and now it's classified as a slider, which probably has something to do with the movement profile and stuff. But that slider has been lights out as well, a 40.5% CSW. But I think he's going to be one of the most coveted relievers going into next season.
Yeah, I would agree. I'd love to see. The only knock is that he's only has 12 saves, but
yeah,
you know, you'll take everything else you can get. Like, everything else looks great. And I really, as long as he stays in the same role, even if it's like a split save role with Gallegos, I think you're still looking at a top 12 reliever for next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the whip too. He just doesn't put anybody on base. He doesn't give up hits. 0.68 whip. And he also has the second most wins among relievers with 9. That trails only Adam Simber, who I think has 12 or something ridiculous.
Yeah, there's always one guy. Yeah.
Well, it's been like Yusmeiro Petit in the past. Yeah. Last year it was like Brent Suter, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Definitely. So yeah, Helsley is definitely a guy that I'm going to be excited to draft next year, as long as he stays healthy throughout the off season and sort of doesn't let Gallegos take a bunch of saves from him in this final month. But yeah, those are the time.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
A lot of time, especially when they're probably be playing in October too, so they got like 2 months left until we see what their bullpen looks like for next year.
Definitely. Well. Yeah. I didn't even think about that. Yeah. Considering the usage in the playoffs is going to be interesting to see.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So now that we've covered a lot of risers or guys that have held on to first half gains, it's time to do the exact opposite and talk about guys who either fell off after a hot first half or just haven't been too great all year. It's mostly guys that fell off after a good first half. And we're going to start with the poster child for that. And that's Josh Hader, who we've been talking about all season long. He had like a scoreless streak forever. And then since then, it's just been disaster. I don't even know what to think about him going into next season. Have you considered that yet?
Yeah, that's going to be the biggest, I feel like, minimum, maximum. You know, we talk about where guys end up being drafted. I think it's going to be all over the place with him, depending on, you know, it's tough to say that it's only been one half a year that he's struggled, because, you know, going into the season, he always has had this like second half, like kind of funk. Usually it happens for like a couple weeks in August, and then he turns it around. This has definitely been longer than what it usually is. So it's definitely concerning, especially when we talking about how he's trying to get back to like, you know, the same arm slot that he's used to. And it seems like an easy fix, but that sometimes takes, you know, that could take time. That could, you know, lot of other things could happen in between then, you know, by the time he figures it out. So I don't know. I feel like the Padres are going to lean on him regardless, you know, next year. I think unless he really just like continues to struggle hard the rest of this season, I feel like the Padres will, you know, they traded a lot to get him. So they're going to want him in the closer role next year and hope that he figures it out between now and, you know, next March.
Definitely. He's been, it's been a tale of two seasons. He had a scoreless streak of 17.2 innings through June 5th. Since then, he's tossed 22 frames. That comes with an 11.45 ERA. Mm. He's still striking guys out, but that's just terrible. That last blow up, the six earned run one, oh my God. It was just like, that was this the climax. And then he came back for a save the other night, which was nice to see, but it was only because Martinez had pitched back-to-back days. So it's still hard to tell how they're feeling about him in San Diego and how he's feeling about his stuff, but it's definitely going to be interesting to watch him throughout September and also into the playoffs.
Yeah, that save he had the other day, his command and was not great. It's still not the, you know, the dominant Josh Hader that we've, you know, become used to the last couple of years.
Definitely. Well, another guy that had an incredible first half, had one of the lowest whips all season long. That was something that I was noting for a while. And then he's just sort of fallen into not oblivion. He's just like, he just doesn't seem to be talked about anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's Eli Morgan of the Cleveland Guardians.
Yeah, I know. You know, he's got a great changeup. I remember Nick talking about him when he was a starter, like, having a good changeup, and mm-hmm. that's carried over to this season coming out of the bullpen. But you know, it's kind of where Trevor Stephan's been, you know, climbing up the ladder. It's Morgan's been kind of going the other way, and he's really had a tough second half. I think he's just, you know, his fastball's very, very hittable. It's, you know, 92 miles per hour, fairly straight. So I think hitters have started to make adjustments against him, and you know, it's great. He still has his whip still staying under one, which is great to see. And it's partially because he really doesn't walk anyone, you know, 4.9% walk rate is great. But you know, other than that, it's a little bit concerned with where he might end up in that bullpen for the rest of this year and starting next year.
Yeah, the 4.9% walk rate is good, other than the fact that he just gives up so many fly balls. So he's sort of mm-hmm. super home run prone, which has been a bugaboo for him somewhat. He has really struggled since June 21st. He has a 9 ERA across 18 innings, and that has ballooned his ERA up to 4.21, which doesn't really go along with a 0.9 for a whip, but that's really what happens when you're like a fly ball guy. Like, you're not going to give up a lot of hits and you're not going to give up a lot of walks, but the ones that the batters do get a hold of, they are going to leave the park, and that has really hurt him this year.
Yeah, and he's lucky that he's in a not the most, you know, hitter friendly park at least. So he's, you know, that field's able to mask some of that fly ball issue, mm-hmm. some of those fly ball issues, but it's still, yeah, it's definitely, you're going to be, you know, playing with fire whenever you're letting up that many fly balls.
Definitely. In a similar vein, a guy who has transitioned from being a starter to being a reliever and who was really good in the first half and has been somewhat mediocre in the second half is Will Crow. He's been the closer in Pittsburgh ever since David Bednar hit the IL, and he's been, you know, not as good as he was in the second half. I think he was like a really exciting pitcher. Like, I love, one of my favorite storylines is just the guy who transitions from being a terrible starter to a dominant reliever. That's always mm-hmm. a fun thing to see, but he has not been able to hold the gains that he had in the first half.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting that his role is shifted like pretty, you know, greatly from the beginning of the year where he was their long reliever. Mm-hmm. And I remember like when he started getting like, oh, he might be a pretty interesting fantasy option, is when he was working, you know, 2 to 3 innings every outing, and you'd go 2 or 3 innings, you know, 5 or 6 strikeouts and, you know, no runs, no, you know, 1 or 2 base runners at most. And now he's transitioned into this like one inning guy where he's been having issues. I don't know if it's, I don't know if that's part of it, but I mean, a lot of his metrics are starting to give me doubt about where he, you know, is he going to be a really good, is he going to be a really reliable setup option next year if that's the role he stays in with Bednar coming back? You know, strike to walk ratio isn't definitely isn't great. CSW under 29%. It's not a ton, you know, there's not a lot on this page that really jumps off as like, oh, that's like intriguing. I definitely want to roster him and learn more about where this is coming from. So his slider change, you know, he's a slider changeup guy. He throws his four seamer only 16% of the time. He still has like that starter's mix of four pitches where, so I wonder if he's better, if he's just better suited to be more of a long inning, you know, come in early in games and little less, you know, lower leverage spots and just, you know, work him in that type of role and find someone else to help set up for David Bednar.
Definitely. Since June 18th, he's gone 6 outs at least only twice, and in that time he has a 5.34 ERA and a 23-12 strikeout to walk ratio, which is not ideal. Yeah, that's not what you're looking for. So I agree. I love the guys that go multiple innings, and it sort of lets them rack up strikeouts from a volume perspective, which is probably what he needs to do to be fantasy relevant, but also probably to be super effective. I think they just need Bednar back there and it'll probably fix things out. They just don't really have anybody else to rely on, especially with like their two other best relievers in Colin Holderman and Yeri De Los Santos hitting the IL as well.
Also hurt. Yeah.
But actually, this is sort of beside the point, but did you see Robert Stevenson landed in Pittsburgh?
I did not. That's actually interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I had seen that. Yeah, he made his debut yesterday pitching for the Pirates, and it's pretty interesting because he was a guy that I liked preseason pitching in Colorado, and now he's going to be a full-time reliever outside of Colorado, which is basically the best move that you can make. So
it is, but I don't. I would rather it be somewhere other than Pittsburgh because I don't know how I feel about them developing pitchers.
Exactly. Pitchers. Yeah.
But it's interesting. I'll keep an eye on that for sure.
Exactly. For sure. Yeah. Definitely not something to act on from a fantasy perspective. Speaking of Pittsburgh, guys that they weren't able to develop, Clay Holmes of the New York Yankees developed very well in the first half of the 2022 season, as well as the second half of the 2021 season. And now he's sort of fallen off a little bit, whether that be in terms of effectiveness, but also he had an injury that kept him out for the past 2 weeks, and now he's returned. He's put up a couple scoreless innings, and he's probably the guy he's the only guy out there who's basically a trusted reliever that can be used in the ninth. So he seems like he's going to take over the closer role pretty fast, but he's fallen off from looking like the most dominant reliever, one of the most dominant relievers in baseball, to looking not invincible. I can't think of the word that I'm thinking for. Not invincible.
There is a word I can't think of it right now. I don't. I know what you're talking about, though. I got.
Yeah.
He's been better lately. It's not been against the best, you know, competition with the Angels, but my issues with him before he hit the IL was that he was, you know, hitters had just made adjustments. They weren't chasing anything. So, you know, it just comes down to him making an adjustment, you know, back. And that's basically what baseball is hitters making adjustments, then pitchers, and then, you know, it goes on. So I still have confidence in him. And, you know, the Yankees are going to need to rely on him because the rest of that bullpen is very, very beat up at the moment. So it's going to be interesting to see where they use him and how, you know, are they going to be reluctant to put him back into the closer mix right away? They've been struggling as a team, so they really haven't had many chances lately, especially since he came back. But this team's too good, I think, to, you know, not to continue to be the worst team in the American League, which they were in August. So I think they turned things around.
They're really that bad?
They had the worst record in the American League in August. Yeah.
Holy moly. They play in the same league as the A's.
The A's, the Tigers. I mean, yeah, there's
that's crazy. So, yikes.
Yeah, they're struggling, but I just like there's just too much talent there, I feel like. And they're starting to get healthy. They just called up, you know, Oswald Peraza.
Mm-hmm.
They're starting to get some reinforcements back, and it'll be nice to see, even, you know, not, you know, as a Red Sox fan, I don't really mind anymore because the Red Sox are out of it. So I would like to see Clay Holmes from a relief, you know, perspective, just kind of get back to his first half nastiness and take back the closer role and finish the season strong.
Yeah, you're a bullpen guru. You want to see everybody succeed. Like how Nick always says, like, he like say stuff about a starter, but he wants everyone to be dope, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Everyone to be dope.
Exactly. So hoping for the best for Clay Holmes, not only because he's on my home league fantasy team. We'll see. But a guy who has sort of slipped into the ether, he's in some other universe right now. He's not even on the roster resource depth chart right now for the St. Louis Cardinals is Genesis Cabrera. Yeah. What happened to him?
That's a guy that's like one of the first people I thought of who he's never had great Statcast metrics, but he has like a big fastball. He started off the year very hot. I remember moving him up into the top 20 of my holds list, thinking like, all right, well, maybe he's turning the corner, he's starting to get some more swings and misses, and then the wheels kind of fell off and here we are, and he's not really someone that they rely on anymore, which, you know, he was getting a ton of holds for them earlier on in the season. Mm-hmm. It's just they can't trust him anymore. So I don't know. You said he's not on the Fangraphs. Did he get
no,
sent down?
No, he got sent down on the 27th. Oh, yeah, he's okay, in AAA.
Yeah, I mean,
that's pretty wild. 13 holds for the season though. That's
I feel crazy. Like all of those came in the first like 2 to 3 months.
Yeah, it's been a rough go for him recently.
You know, I see the big fastball. He can get it up to 97 from the left side, and you know, curveball has some potential. It gets some swings and misses, but yeah, it's always been command. It's been a command issue with him, and it starts with that. And yeah, but yeah, that's someone who just like had a great first half or good first half and then just kind of fell off the map. I feel like this is kind of the Genesis Cabrera's the name to go with for this category.
Definitely. Yeah. Fallen off massively just since the middle of July, July 13th, he's thrown 11 and a third innings in the majors. It's come not only with a 3-6 strikeout to walk ratio, and no, I'm not saying that backwards. He has 3 strikeouts and 6 walks across his last 11 and a third innings. That's an 11.91 ERA because he's allowed 15 earned runs. Yikes is basically the definition of whatever he was doing before he got sent down.
Yeah, that's tough to see because he's always kind of flashed this potential to be a really good reliever, and yeah, it's just it hasn't come together like the Cardinals or anyone's really hoped.
Definitely. Well, another lefty with the same first initial. Oh, what a transition, Jake. Gregory Soto of the Detroit Tigers, who has he was looking like he was taking a step forward in the sense that in the first half he wasn't walking guys, and that was something that plagued him. We talked about that a few times. I know that. Mm-hmm. That he was like not walking anybody and was like, oh wow, like it actually looked like he's good. Like it seemed that he was maybe somebody who was not going to be able to sustain his success from 2021 because he just walked too many guys. And then it finally looked like, oh, well, we're finally getting a guy who's able to control the ball, like put in the zone. He's not going to have a 1.35 whip like he had in 2021. And then now it's just all reverted back to normal. I wrote him up in my reliever ranks yesterday for the Thursday edition, the September 1st edition. He tossed 32 pitches in his last appearance, which, you know, already puts him in jeopardy for pitching on Thursday, which is today, the day we're recording this. And it continued a recent trend that he's just like reverted back to his 2021 self, where he just hands out too many free passes and he's paid a large price for it. Since the beginning of July, he sports a 5.21 ERA across 19 innings with an unsavory, that's the verb of choice or adjective of choice that I used, 16-13 strikeout to walk ratio. Not good at all. So I could see Chafin or even the previously mentioned Joe Jimenez taking over the closer role at some point, because Soto's just walking too many guys and he's been unsuccessful because of it. And it just might be time, even though he's a two-time All-Star.
Yeah, I think it's funny. He's kind of like he's like Genesis Cabrera with better stuff, like slightly better stuff. The same issues with, you know, he's got a great fastball from the left side. Love to see that. But then, yeah, the walk rate, the strikeout rate's not, it doesn't really match how high the walk rate is. Yeah, he's been frustrating. Like, you know, he just kind of waiting for him to have that big, he keeps having these all-star seasons somehow, but it doesn't feel like it, you know, it's still want more. And yeah, Joe Jimenez just got a save, I think last week or the week recently somewhat. So I wonder if they would, you know, consider a change there. And I don't really know what the I feel like Soto is what he is at this point. I mean, it's not, it's obviously not too late for him to, you know, turn it around and find a way to not walk 12.5% percent of batters in a season, but it's been pretty consistent with him as far as these numbers go.
Definitely. We're going to go with three straight lefties to close out this segment, and that'll end with Taylor Rogers, who was one of the best relievers in baseball through the first 2 months. And then he sort of started falling off from May 28th through August 14th, which bled into his time in Milwaukee. He had a 8.76 ERA across 24 and two-thirds innings pitch that came with six losses, even though he did lock down 11 saves during that time. He has sort of righted the ship a little with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 and two-thirds scoreless innings pitch, no earned runs across his last few outings. But yeah, he definitely struggled in the middle there, and it looked like I sort of doubted him at the beginning of the season when he was just going off and he looked like one of the best relievers in baseball and seemed like the right time to sell high. And then everything came crashing down.
Yeah, he's someone who he's kind of the, for as far as relievers go, he's the CSW darling, I think, because he gets so many called strikes. He needs to be very, you know, pinpoint with his accuracy. And if he's missing just by a little bit, you know, his stuff's not good enough to, you know, to leave, you know, over the middle of the zone like, you know, some other guys can. So he's really, you know, been fighting it and was fighting it in San Diego and then at the beginning of his Milwaukee tenure, but he has been pitching a lot better lately. And, you know, like I think we said at the time of the trade that the Brewers have a way of just kind of taking relievers and turning them into, you know, or taking pitchers and turning them into great relievers. So they fix him. He's, you know, something's happened there where he's figured it out. And I have pretty high confidence in him for the rest of the season in Milwaukee as their top setup man. But he's going to hit free agency. And I wonder if you know, is he going to get another chance to close somewhere next year? I think that's going to be interesting to see.
That will be interesting. I could see him going to the Dodgers because everybody goes to the Dodgers, but you know, they could use some reinforcements out there in the bullpen. And he just seems like a guy where, you know, everybody starts to doubt him and then they get him in Los Angeles at a discount, and then he just becomes the guy that he was in the first half, but for an entire season. So will be pretty interesting free agency to watch.
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, I could see him going to, you know, a contender as in a setup role. Probably that's probably more likely than seeing him close somewhere else.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Well, those are the risers and fallers from the second half, guys that we'll be continuing to watch in September to see if, you know, the fallers can right the ships, if the risers can continue their breakout seasons, and what that's going to mean going into the offseason and draft season next year. But now it's time to talk about which bullpens we're going to be watching the next week or so until our next pod. We should be getting Callen back for that one, so that will be exciting. Yes. If everybody's been missing Callen, he's going to be back next week, so we'll have a three-man pod. It's going to be really exciting. But which bullpens are you going to be looking out for across the next week?
I mean, it's interesting because I think we definitely talked about a couple of them, and it's still, I want to see the Dodgers, what happens there with Blake. I believe Blake Treinen's still scheduled to come off the IL
on the second
the second of September. So today, if you're listening on the first day this podcast comes out, and you know, does he, what role does he have right away? They just bruised our Gratterall, just went back on the IL. That doesn't look like Kimbrel's ready to get back into the saves mix yet. So interesting to see how they, you know, what they do with that situation going forward. And then, it looks like as of recording this, Jonathan Hernandez is in for the save.
Ooh.
So Jonathan Hernandez might be back in into the being the favorite for the saves, for the close, for saves in Texas. So that's another bullpen to see if someone kind of like Hernandez could just kind of run away with that. But yeah, that's and other than that, it's just the Yankees bullpen, you know, what's Clay Holmes' status going to be. So yeah, that's pretty much all I got.
Cool. Yeah, I think I'll be keeping an eye out on the Padres. I think Nick Martinez is the guy right now, but it'll be interesting to see how Hader works in there, or if Luis Garcia turns it into more of a committee. It doesn't really look like that right now, but I think everybody expects Hader to retake the role at some point. And then I think other than that, I'm going to be watching the Cubs, which is probably not going to get me the best results on my fantasy team, but it should be pretty interesting to see if Wick or Hughes takes it over, or if they both just share it for the end of the season. Through the end of the season, it'll be something to keep an eye out for. And then, yeah, I totally agree with Texas. And I mean, it seems like a lot of the other bullpens are solidifying after some turmoil in the past couple of weeks. So it's nice to get some clarity finally now that we're ending the season, because I don't think teams like to go into the postseason without knowing who their ninth inning guy is. So it's like, you sort of want to solidify that right now.
It's not an ideal strategy for playoff teams.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, why don't you plug your socials or anything you got going on?
Sure. Yeah. So find me on Twitter at I am Rick Graham. And as always, just putting out the closing time, hold up, and save plus hold list each week for pitcher list. And yeah, as always, I need to shout out the relief ranks team, and Jake and everyone there does an awesome job with, you know, keeping you up to date on all of the changes to every bullpen on each morning. So make sure you look at that every morning.
Yeah, it's the final stretch. You can find me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. I also write for Baseball HQ. I do reliever ranks, like Rick said, at Pitcherless. And I also sometimes write for theathletesub.org, but I do a podcast over there as well, where you can find that on the website socials. But yeah, that's pretty much going to do it. Do you have any final thoughts, or just about done?
That's about it. Yeah. Looking forward to next week where we get the three-man pod going and get Kalen back. So yeah, should be fun.
Yeah, should be exciting. I'm pumped to get the boy back in. And the OG host, I can finally go back to my analyst role.
There you go. Yeah, it's a lot smoother. Yeah. Being in that role. I know from experience.
Yeah. You just sit back and answer questions. Yes. Yeah. It took me a while to get used to being a host because I'd never hosted any sort of podcast, but I feel like I've definitely improved immensely over the past few pods.
You've been doing a great job.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah. So, but I'm glad that you'll be staying with us. So
me too.
Be fun.
Me too. Yeah. It's going to be an exciting off season and final month of the season. The postseason is going to be interesting to talk about. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of In the Pen. Talk to everyone next week.